Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knockoma Nation podcast show. Oh, Knockoma Nation podcast show.
Hey, it's another episode of the Knockoma Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's JT Holton, and that's Josh Rhubarb Brown. Fellas, how you doing today?
Pretty good. You know, ready for the beach.
Are you headed to the beach sometime soon?
Yeah, and a little less than a month now. A little less than a month. Going to go down to, what's it called? St. Augustine.
Oh, nice. Nice. JT, now you're going to the beach this coming week, right?
Yeah, I'm going down to Destin for a few days and hang out down there for a little bit. Just a few days.
You should,
be fun.
You should hit up Ryan and say hey to him while you're down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know he's from there.
Yeah, he lives at, what is it called, A30? Is that what they call it? Right there? I think it's A30 is what it's called. It's like between Destin and Panama City. It's like whatever that little spot is. I can't remember the name of it exactly, but it's like A30, something like that.
Mm.
Anyway.
I'm also going camping this weekend. Going to go down to Watauga Lake, pitch a tent.
Sounds intense.
Gonna bring some stogies, my radio.
TP or wigwam?
TP.
TP or wigwam. And, sounds a little intense.
Yeah. John D. Howard has gotten me really into cigars. I've really been enjoying.
Has he?
Are you on the Macanudos?
I am. Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay.
Now, Josh, do you have an addictive personality?
Very much so. Yeah.
Okay, because, like, I remember, what was it, a year ago, maybe,
mm-hmm.
that you were really in on the smokeless tobacco.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And chewing tobacco, mm-hmm. dip.
Now
you seem to have kind of moved on.
Well, what happened was this. So, I got indoctrinated by Dr. Andrew Rodu out of the University of Louisville, who... He has many videos on YouTube, and he's written some books about this. But basically, he and most doctors in Europe right now say that smokeless tobacco is basically virtually harmless. They say an apple has more carcinogens in it than smokeless tobacco. Bad tobacco is when you burn it. Cigarettes are obviously bad. The filters are bad. Once you burn tobacco, that's when the carcinogens get into you. But smokeless tobacco is basically harmless. And then they talk about nicotine because everybody's like, what about nicotine? And basically, nicotine's like just as bad as caffeine could be. Anyways, I got really into smokeless tobacco. Got really into chew. Was really enjoying it. Then my wife freaked the fuck out, and I couldn't deal with it because I couldn't talk to her about it because she thought I was basically killing myself, and I caved, and I didn't do anymore. But I still have a pouch of Red Man in my tackle box, but don't tell Nikki.
Okay, she doesn't listen to the podcast anyway, so you're good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Smokeless tobacco is harmless.
It is. It sounds very crazy. It sounds like a right wing conspiracy theorist weirdo saying that, and it sounds stupid and all that. But it's true. Zero deaths in the last several years have been attributed to smokeless tobacco. Zero cancerous deaths. Then there's Tony Gwynn, right? Well, Andrew Rodu talks about Tony Gwynn because Tony Gwynn, obviously. If I posted something like this,
I was about
on Twitter,
to bring him up because
Rodu, according to him, and I'll have to send you this video. It's actually very interesting. According to him, and again, he's an oral pathologist at University of Louisville, and it's not just him. It's a lot of doctors in Europe right now, but it's very very taboo. I think in America still. I think in maybe 15 years it'll be a little different, but. Rodu says, yeah, Tony Gwynn, right? The type of mouth cancer Tony Gwynn had, if he died from smokeless tobacco, he's the only person ever to die from it. you know, so he's not saying that he didn't die from it. He's just saying that if Tony Gwynn died from smokeless tobacco, that's the only case they know about, right? Obviously, super sad. We love Tony Gwynn. Huge, you know, we love Tony Gwynn. But yeah, that's obviously
as we're recording this. As we're recording this today, June 16th, 6 years ago today, Tony Gwynn passed away.
So, wow, man.
Ironic,
wow,
you brought him up. One of my sad, favorite, man. Probably my so favorite sad. Non-Brave player.
Yeah,
him
yeah,
and Cal
yeah.
Ripken, probably my two favorite non-Braves of all. I love Tony Gwynn. I thought Tony Gwynn was
Frank
the
Thomas.
Man.
Frank Thomas for me.
Frank Thomas. Yeah. I think I went to see, I don't think I noticed this until like a couple years later, but I think I have been to see the Braves and Padres play the most of every day. Like I went and saw Tony Gwynn. I've seen Tony Gwynn play it three or four times.
Same,
which is crazy.
When I was
live
growing
here.
Up, JT, you and I probably went to the same games. But I always got those. If you were good enough in school and high enough that you got the like tickets, you know, they would send you like you got a discounted ticket. It was like $10 or something to get in to see the Braves. Mm-hmm. And so we would go to those games a couple times a year, and. It never failed. The only two teams growing up that I ever saw the Braves play before I was an adult was the Montreal Expos and the San Diego Padres. Yep.
Yeah.
I never saw.
I love those Padres.
Ever.
Yeah, those Padres jerseys. I loved them. Oh, those are such a cool look. I don't like the mustard, the brown and yellow, but those early 90s with the orange and navy blue was just cool, clean look.
I think I've shared this on the show before, but favorite moment. From those games as a kid was me and my cousin were there, and you know at old Fulton County Stadium you could like look down into the bullpen very easily, especially the especially the guest bullpen. And we're sitting there one day, guy gets up to start warming up, and my cousin starts shouting at him, "Dude, your shoes untied! Hey man, your shoes untied!" Now we're like 10, okay? So, I mean, like, we're super young, 8 or 10, something like this. So, the guy stops to check his shoe, and he's wearing a set of Velcro cleats. And it was our favorite moment as kids, because we got a guy with Velcro cleats to stop and check and make sure his shoes were tied. And that's why I don't, to this day, I don't care what a baseball player says about politics, because some of them are dumb enough to stop and check their Velcro shoes to make sure they're tied.
Also, back to the...
Some of them are old. They're grown-ups wearing Velcro shoes. That's weird. Yeah.
Back to the chewing tobacco thing. Oddly enough, Nikki doesn't mind at all when I smoke a cigar around her. She actually enjoys it.
So, that is weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But you can't... I don't know if you know this, guys, but you can't logic with women. I'm not sure if you guys know that. If you guys want to start a podcast about that,
very aware.
I'm totally 100%, down.
100% aware. Yeah, 100%. That's why we have not had the ladies from Mansplain on yet. I'm trying to give them enough time. See, I'm sure they're mad at us.
If you give them an inch, though, they take a mile. If we get Ashlyn on the podcast, do you understand what that means? It's not like we're just having a guest on. It's much more than that. It's like giving Bubba Wallace a Black Lives Matter race car. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just let Ashlyn on a podcast, you know?
No, right. Yeah, it doesn't just... Go ahead, JT.
If anyone knows about giving a woman an inch, never mind.
Josh or Bubba, which one were you going for there?
Stereotypically, I'm going to say not Bubba.
Okay.
Don't know if that's necessarily true in his case, but from what I understand.
Yeah, so we hear. Being said, you know, in all seriousness, we're eventually going to invite the girls from or some of the girls, or a girl from Man. I don't know if we can handle all three of them from Mansplain Baseball to come on the show with us. But we talked about it, like when they first started. We talked about like inviting them on, and you know what we recognize is our first 20 episodes. We can't believe anyone came on the show with us, and we really hope no one ever goes back and listens to those shows. If we're 100% honest, like
they're pretty
terrible. So we're trying to, like, give them some time to hit their groove. For Ashlyn to figure out, she's not a Instagram model on Twitter, despite her attempts and the thirsty dudes that at her.
Hey, that's...
I mean, it's not her fault. It's not her fault that thirsty dudes at her. I'm not blaming her for that. I'm just saying. But yeah, we'll eventually have them on for all you people that keep like worrying. There's like there's no bad blood. It's okay. They did think that us trolling them was like, I don't know. I think they got upset about that early on. But you know, we're us. We're not gonna like stop trolling people just because they're women. That would be kind of like
that'd be sexist. And, yeah.
Yeah, and we're not sexist in the least. Not even a little bit.
Not at all. I just think women aren't as awesome as we are. That's there's nothing wrong with that belief, but you know. They're illogical, crazy people. And there's nothing sexist about that statement.
That's true because, Josh, you too are an illogical, crazy person. You literally just made that statement on a podcast. So you too are an illogical, crazy person. That's the way this works. Oh, my God. We're all going to die. That being said, hey, fellas, you know, we talked to – You brought up Bubba Wallace. Can we talk about the fact we talked about this just a little bit last week? But Josh, I don't remember if I got to talk about this with you or not.
Yeah,
NASCAR has banned the Confederate flag.
Yeah,
like for one, I don't care, but two, it's interesting. Let's talk about it a little bit. You know, like I really don't care that they banned it, but I do think it's an interesting conversation.
Here are some of my thoughts. So first of all, so like Bubba Wallace has been like hashtag my driver, you know, mm-hmm. for the last several years. I love Bubba Wallace.
You've been very vocal about that. You've said that to us bunches of times.
Yeah, I've been very out about my love for Bubba Wallace. But
yeah.
But what I find interesting is it's hard for me to take him as being genuine because If you watch NASCAR, if you watch pregame, if you kind of, and now I haven't been to a race in years, so I will say that. But if you watch pregame stuff and you just kind of pay attention to NASCAR, I'd venture to say, like the rednecks love Bubba Wallace. They all love Bubba Wallace. In fact, when they announce the names at a race, which they do, it's kind of like the starting lineup at a baseball game.
Yeah,
only a couple guys over the last 3 to 4 years get consistently almost every race ovations. It's Chase Elliott. Mm-hmm. It's Bubba Wallace. And it's maybe one or two other guys. And everybody loves Chase Elliott. And when I say everybody, I mean all the, I'm just saying everybody, but like it's a catch all for like NASCAR rednecks. NASCAR rednecks love Bubba Wallace. Right. They love Chase Elliott. They hate Kurt Busch. And Kyle Busch.
And they hate
Joey Logano, right? And then they have their other, you know, they like their Clint Boyers. You know what I mean? They have some other guys they like too, right? But the rednecks love Bubba Wallace. They do, man. And they love him because he's from Bama and he's fun and he's got a great personality and all that, you know, and his name is Bubba, right? They love Bubba Wallace. And so I think what the media and what Bubba's doing a little bit by doing all this is saying to the redneck NASCAR person that they're racist, you know, terrible people. When I just find it interesting because they love him. They really do. Now, let's talk about the flag. So I'll admit when I first saw the statement from NASCAR, honestly, I thought that I thought Confederate flags they're not even at races. I never even seen them at races. I was wrong. I Google image searched it, and by God, the Old Glory, Old Dixie or whatever was flying high, like all over the damn place, like in the infield. It's a thing, right? But here's my thing, and this is kind of what I was telling you guys in the group chat over the weekend. I would say that. And I feel like I can speak to this pretty well, I think, because my redneck stepbrothers, y'all, and my brother Ben, like, they are NASCAR nerds, man. Like, they know NASCAR. I hang out with them. I fish with them. I shoot guns with them. They know NASCAR. And so I feel like even the rednecks with the flags, right, they're not doing it because they're – to them, that means that they love the South. Now I'm
and
not
they're rebels.
And that they're rebels. Now I'm not saying that the flag is good. And in fact, one of my favorite things to make fun of is when you're driving down the road and there's a pickup truck and they're flying a giant American flag right next to a giant Confederate flag. To me, that's funny. Yeah, I like to make fun of that because the Confederacy, you know, you're trying to be a patriot, but like the Confederacy is literally the only country to say, we're not patriotic, screw you, we're leaving. And so it's funny. I like to make fun of that. But the redneck NASCAR fan that loves Bubba Wallace, who's flying that flag, I would just venture to say that almost all of them are not racist. That to them, that flag means Southern heritage. Is it a little ignorant? Perhaps. We can have that conversation. Yeah,
for sure.
Do they understand the meaning of that flag? Probably not. Are a lot of them the kind of folks that are like, you know, the Civil War didn't have much to do with slavery? Probably. Is that a dumb take? It's a really dumb take. It's stupid.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is they're not bad people. You know what I mean? They're not. And I know those people.
If you continue to call them that will piss them off. Yeah.
It will. And fun fact, they'll stop spending money at NASCAR races. And I think they will. I think that you're going to see a decline. And I think it's silly to say that you're not going to watch because of that. But it's more than that flag. It's saying F you to people who want to do what they want to do.
I think it's also a little bit of a flash in the face of NASCAR history and mm-hmm. what it comes out of. Not saying that not anything to do with slavery or the Confederacy even, but the Southern heritage of being rebels against a cause. That they were bootleggers. That's where the race came from. Is they were they were running from the law, literally, and that's some of the identity. So I think there's a little bit of betrayal there. That being said, I mean I don't have a problem with it. I think this is another one of those things like we talked about yesterday on the show that this was a move that wasn't really needed in the sense of. Maybe I'm wrong.
It was so predictable.
And
it was
said you looked up the videos. You looked up the videos, so maybe there's a lot more of it than I'm aware of. But to me, I don't think of the rebel flag at NASCAR stuff anymore.
I don't either. But there, it seems to be that it has been a thing in the infield, not really in the stands, but like in the infield with the RVs, and you never really know what you're seeing on the internet. You know what I mean? Like. So maybe it was from maybe one or two places, perhaps. I don't know, but I saw a lot. Sure. I saw a lot of them, you know. But, you know, and also.
I could totally see that at Talladega.
At Talladega, like all day, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's like, it's
and
almost
that's where
like,
my people come from.
Do at Talladega, yeah. You know, like.
And I have some, like my redneck stepbrothers, you know, they're from Cedartown, Georgia. They grew up going to Talladega. If you talk to my stepdad, who you know, you guys have heard me talk about Tuna before. That's my stepdad, Charles. His nickname's Tuna. He's got the coolest stories, man. Dude, in the 80s, Tuna and my stepbrothers, they would go to Talladega every year. They run a U-Haul, and they'd get a bunch of, like, air mattresses, and they'd sleep in a U-Haul in the infield. And that's what you did. And then in about 92, they outlawed U-Hauls. You couldn't do it anymore, so the rednecks couldn't really afford to do that. They didn't have RVs. Made it tougher to bring in beer. I think they limited the amount of beer, but all that to say, these are good people. These are not racist people. Can we have a conversation on the ignorance of the flag? For sure. But you have to understand people. You have to understand like where their hearts are. And I don't think anybody wants to do that. Right. But
it's a whole lot easier to just pause and make the decision. Yeah.
And also, sure. I think when the NASCAR redneck fan sees the Black Lives Matter car, they don't see the words Black Lives Matter. Because if you've been living under a rock over the last 5 years and you wake up and you see Black Lives Matter, you think, yeah. Of course of course, Black Lives Matter. That's awesome.
Yeah, right.
That's great. But that's not what the redneck NASCAR fan sees when they see that car. They see what that means, at least right now, and it's what it means to me, unfortunately. But what that means is, if you don't think like I do, you're a terrible person. You're hateful. If you like Trump, you're the worst. You're a racist. If you don't agree with everything I say, you should be canceled. I hate you.
If you wear an OAN shirt, you
exactly.
Are
if you wear an OAN shirt, I mean, again, like maybe a little bit on the right of the spectrum on the news, but like I'm telling you, like they just they read the news, and so like, if you don't like us, or if you are anything towards the right, you are the worst ever. That's what that means. And so that's when they see that, and when they probably, I'm sure there were so many tweets from people just disavowing Bubba Wallace and all that stuff, probably, you know, but that's what they're seeing. They're not seeing just Black Lives Matter. They're seeing a lot more than that, you know, and I understand it. I get it.
And that's the context. And like, and that was what we were talking about, Josh, is like, once they win the language argument of naming themselves Black Lives Matter, you can't have the conversation anymore. It's like conservatives winning the battle and calling it partial birth abortion and using that language. That sounds terrible. You can't have an argument about partial birth abortion being okay because that sounds absolutely horrible. You know, like,
right.
it's terrible. So if you win the language in an argument, then you've won the argument. You know, that's the way they teach you to do it in rhetoric classes.
And here's what's probably going to happen too. I tweeted about this. And I was kind of being silly, but honestly, like Petty Motorsports, they're going to get rid of Bubba Wallace. Why? Because he's not very good. He's not. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be racist because they did.
Exactly.
That'd be pretty petty of them.
But he came in second at Daytona. I watched it. It was like the greatest day ever. I was in Minnesota for like business. I remember watching that. And me and the PETM guys were tweeting about it. But came in second. It was freaking awesome. But other than that, he's not. Like, he finishes around 25th. He's not very good.
You don't have to be good to be a money-making enterprise in NASCAR.
That's true. That's
look at the career of Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, Dale Earnhardt Jr., never that great of a race car driver.
Michael Waltrip, same story. Yeah.
Yeah, my gosh, made money hand over fist being Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, he's probably the richest NASCAR driver of all time. So I think there's definitely with guys like Chase Elliott and guys like Bubba Wallace, NASCAR sees this guy. Hey, and no sport is in more desperate need of star power than NASCAR is. They've been hit hard by the retirements of Jeff Gordon, by the retirement of Dale Earnhardt Jr. They don't have a lot of recognizable faces in that sport right now. They haven't done a good job of making new stars. I mean, Tony Stewart is retired. I mean, so in a few years, when the Bush brothers are gone and when Kevin Harvick's gone and Jimmy Johnson is gone, what are they going to do? So I think they need to lean into this, and they need to invest in their young drivers. They need to invest in the guys with star potential. You know, whether you agree with the fact that they need to take away the Confederate flag or not, I think that's secondary. I think the most important thing is for NASCAR to invest and get behind their drivers of the future, the Chase Elliotts, the Bubba Wallaces, the guys that are going to be the stars that got to lead NASCAR into this next 10 to 15 years, because they're really, really starved for names and faces and people you'd recognize, because they've let a lot of those star power die off and have nobody to replace them. The 24 car and the 88 car are two of the biggest cars in NASCAR, right? The former car of Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jeff Gordon. I think I can name you who's driving those cars, but I'm not really sure. And that's a problem. You know, that's a big problem for NASCAR, where you don't see the guys' faces all the time. You see paint color and you see numbers, and that's it.
Yeah.
So
good point.
It's not like the NBA where you can see facial reactions and like LeBron James, like I can picture his face right now because it's on TV all the time. You know, there's nothing hiding his likeness. NASCAR doesn't have that. The drivers are hidden behind a car and a windshield and a helmet and all this other stuff. So I thought it was a good move for NASCAR to do, simply because, you know what, if that's what Bubba wants, then that's what Bubba gets, because we need to invest in our young crowd. We need to invest in the future if we want to be around as a viable product. Because NASCAR's done enough damage. You talk about killing their Southern heritage. NASCAR's done enough damage on their own to do that.
Yeah,
with their convoluted point scheme and having stages and all this other stuff, I can't keep track of how they do all that stuff. They've done enough to confuse the average Joe on how do you win the NASCAR championship. So NASCAR's in desperate need of a good PR move, and I think that's exactly what it was. You know, be ahead of the curve, be proactive on this, and take a stance. And you know what? If it pisses off a bunch of old rednecks that have been waving the Confederate flag since the 1970s at the Talladega Infield, cool, because they're not the future of your sport. Mm-hmm. They're not.
Yeah, I hear you. But I would say that they're the ones that – I don't know, man. I agree with you, but I also disagree a little bit because it's like they're your bread and butter. I don't know. Like once they started closing down tracks, like around like Wilkesboro and all these tracks, and started kind of reach the the West Coast people and the northerner people. It really hurt them. I don't know. I feel like you gotta. I'm not, and this isn't even about the flag. This is more about just. I feel like the rednecks.
Okay, so this is a weird way to describe it, Josh, but. I think what happened was the gentrification of NASCAR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good
and
way
like
to put
this
it, yeah.
Weird way, NASCAR said, we want to try to reach out to all these other people and not be just Southern and redneck and that kind of thing. Which
right.
sounds good. Like, that sounds like a good thing, especially when you're as big as NASCAR was. But then when you started bringing in all these other cultures – it began to redefine the identity of what NASCAR was, not just in being Southern. That's it, because I don't really think it hurt to move away from some of that. But what I think hurt was to lose the lifeblood, the pulse, the identity of the Rubbins racing, the fighting, the little bit raw and edgy.
Yeah.
To be more palatable, it became and so what was the hood that had this kind of meaning, you know, got gentrified by a bunch of suburban white guys, you know, so that now it's not the hood anymore and it doesn't have that kind of meaning, you know, in very much the same kind of way, except it's NASCAR, not the hood, you know, same kind of thing.
Yeah. I think two of the biggest problems NASCAR had, one is cookie cutter race car tracks.
Mm-hmm. And cars.
That do not adhere themselves. Yeah. And cars that don't adhere themselves to a good television product.
I agree.
More super speedways, less places like Las Vegas where there's a second and a half between each car.
Yeah.
And it makes for a dull television product. And number two is quit letting these guys change up their paint schemes every other week.
You're right,
like,
yeah.
If I'm identifying a car, it used to be I can look at the screen and tell you who that is because their paint scheme, you know, I can see, oh, that's Texaco 28, that's Davey Allison.
Like,
you know, it's
like
black,
Sunday,
I know what it looks
like.
I know what Dale Earnhardt looks like, I know where Ernie Irvin is.
That's a great,
you know?
That's
like you.
They
knew.
Change these paint schemes every week, and I can't tell you who was who because I can't tell from watching the TV screen who it is. This who because that's how you. It would be like the Yankees changing their jersey every week.
Yeah.
What the hell sense does that
right.
make? Oh well, this week we're going to be orange and blue. What?
And we're not going to be the Yankees.
No,
we're going to be the Bulldogs this
right,
week.
Right. Because I identify you based on your. It's the only sport that does that. Like. Can you imagine the Los Angeles Lakers changing their name or their jersey color every other week? No, you're purple and gold. That's what everybody knows you as. That's how that's how you identify with the public.
Yeah, man, right.
That's another thing that I've just thought is going way too far where I can't tell who if I'm looking for Chase Elliott, I know he's number 9, but I can't even tell which color he is this week.
Until like
I think it's more of the same of what we were talking about with writers writing about baseball and that kind of thing is this is kind of a culture of sport thing that's happened where more and more sport becomes less and less unique so that we try to be like everybody and everybody's all the same and everybody's equal and like we did away to me the biggest downfall of all of racing, all of NASCAR was when they made the cars all look exactly alike. Because when there was a time you could look at the car and you could say, that's a Ford, that's a Chevy, that's a, you know, that's a whatever, Dodge. And it was very obvious. And you didn't just know that it was a Ford, a Chevy, or a Dodge. You knew that it was like a Z06, or you knew it was based off of a Taurus, or you knew it was based off of, like, the actual model of the car. You knew what they were building the car off of. Now it's just all the same shell with a different logo stuck on the front. And I think what happened is exactly what you were talking about, JT, with tracks like Las Vegas and different places. As they branched out to try to bring in more people, they got more and more generic and in their culture and in their brand. And so like the flag thing, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean a hill of beans. Because, again, I don't care if you get rid of the flag or not.
But mm-hmm. I do think it's symbolic of what NASCAR's done, and this is another step in moving further away from the things that really made them unique to try to be appealing to all. You know, some folks just don't like ketchup. That don't mean that you got to remove the ketchup from what you do. It just means some folks ain't going to like you, you know? Mm-hmm. Cook what the people that are sold out like, you know? If they're buying all the ketchup stuff, then you keep making stuff with ketchup in it. I don't care if there's a few people that don't like ketchup, you know? Yeah. And I think that's true with sport completely. You look at baseball. Baseball's done the same thing. They gave up the pacing of the game, the slow pace, to try to attract a different audience. They gave up and they changed the baseball to try to get more home runs. They changed the rules to try to make it so there's less strikeouts. They changed it so that everything's quicker. And in trying to appeal to the masses, they lose their identity of who they are. And maybe that's a life lesson there, guys. Like, you know, I know we're a weird show and we do weird things, but maybe we all do that sometimes where we, like, try to water down who we are to appeal to everybody. And in the process, kind of lose who we are along the way. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, but I think also if NASCAR ever wanted to not be a niche sport, they had to eventually move away from being, hey, we're in the Southeast and we were founded by bootleggers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like the way the UFC is the same thing. Like UFC was this thing that, like, kind of you knew about on the, like, you know, like in circles.
They were underground and, like, fights. I mean, basically.
Yeah, you found some friends that were into it, and you could get the pay-per-views, and, like, Chuck Liddell was this really cool dude, but he wasn't, like, this nationally known guy. And now, like, UFC is on ESPN. They show highlights on SportsCenter, but it's become so watered down that it's, like, guys can't even wear their own trunks to the ring. They have, like, UFC trunks that they have to wear.
Right.
And it's not, you know, the same as it was. But that's because they were like, look, we can't survive and we can't make enough money being a niche sport.
And maybe
we want to be where the NBA and the NFL and baseball
are. Maybe you hit the nail on the head, though, JT, is maybe in the pursuit to be the biggest, we lose who we are. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's not the goal. And I know capitalism pushes us that way and different things, but baseball was a better game when it was pure. And I will fight for that up and down. I know some people don't believe that. I do believe that. When baseball was, you know, I'll even say pre-steroids, but even with steroids, it was just a different game. Like, it was a game, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but it was a game that was slow, and you were okay with it being slow. It was a game that had pitchers' duels sometime, and you were 100% okay with that. It was a game that centered around defense, and it had underdogs, and it had players that weren't always statistically perfect and at the top of their game in every single category. And that's what made the game beautiful, not just that everybody had maximum output all the time and you had the best players on your team. I mean, you hated that team. You hated the Yankees because they had that crap. And Steinbrenner would go out and pay for all that. And you loved when they lost because you felt like that was an atrocity to the game, somebody going out and trying to buy a team like the Yankees did. And now we've, like, glorified it to the point to that's now what we want all our teams to do, apparently, is go spend all the money so we have all the best players. And I think NASCAR's, like, kind of the same way. And maybe that's a problem. I get, and I'm not saying you weren't saying it was a problem, JT. I'm just saying, like, I think even with UFC, like you were talking about, like, it's this weird line where I do think sometimes we should cull things out of our life and out of who we are and out of, you know, even our businesses, our sports and different things with good reason. I'm not saying never change, but I do think we have to always evaluate change based off of the identity of who we're trying to be.
Yeah. And maybe sometimes it's okay to be a niche sport.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was...
as popular as the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball.
That's kind of what I was kind of trying to say, I guess. You know, NASCAR...
Because we take that...
Kenny said it well.
We understand that in other sports.
Right.
We understand that tennis is never going to be as popular as Major League Baseball is. Like, we get that. You know, as good as Rafael Nadal or Roger Federer are, we understand that tennis is never going to be as popular as the NBA. Like, we just get that, right? The, mm-hmm. It's tennis, and it's on its own little level. Same thing with sport like hockey, or even to a lesser extent, like MLS, you know, like soccer. Maybe we say, okay, yeah, it's cool, but, you know, it's not where the MLB is, you know? Mm-hmm. And we understand that, and that's okay. And that's fine, because sometimes there is fun in enjoying a niche sport, enjoying what it is as what it is. And it's cool. It doesn't have to be mainstream. It doesn't have to be something that everybody enjoys. Sometimes that makes it more fun.
Yeah.
Because the people that get it, get it. The people that don't, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's...
You know?
Tribalism and having an identity that's different from other people is not bad. It only becomes bad when it becomes an idol that I can't be something else because of the tribe I'm attached to. You know, like I can't also like football because I'm a NASCAR fan. Well, that then becomes a problem. But there's nothing wrong with being a NASCAR fan and, like, playing up the identity of who you are. Now, that being said, we started this conversation talking about the flag. I have zero problem with them removing the flag. It's the 40,000 other steps around it of losing their identity that this feels like another step towards that. If you only had just removed the flag, whatever, you know? Like, I think there's some things in life you can do away with because they seem like probably not the best thing to do. And some things that you did away with for the wrong reasons, you know? Anyway, I don't know. This feels like a really deep conversation. It was really cool to have with you guys. I like those when that happens sometimes.
I've enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed it, yeah.
Speaking of baseball, kind of being pure.
Gentrification of NASCAR. Wow, that'd be a podcast right there.
Yeah. Speaking of baseball and a time that it was pure, it's pure. Guys, I haven't seen it yet, but the Maguire Sosa 30 for 30 came out this week. Did either of you guys get to see it yet?
I've been so busy. It's on my queue. It's on my DVR. I haven't gotten to it yet. Yeah. I've been I've got the Lance Armstrong one on there. I still haven't gotten to.
Samesies.
I got the Bruce Lee one on there that I'm ready to watch because I want to see. I kick that guy's ass.
Oh my god!
And I definitely want to watch the summer of '98 because, man, I remember how cool that summer was. Like that was, I remember being just totally captivated. Like my dad would be like, "Hey, you see Maguire homer twice yesterday?" You know, mm-hmm. like that was such a big deal.
Yeah,
like. So the summer of '98 was huge, and so I'm looking forward to watching that and reliving some of that.
Josh, yeah, I think this is you hadn't seen it yet, have you? Right?
No. What's funny is I didn't even know about it. I feel is that weird? I feel like I'm on Twitter and I feel like I should have known about it. But I didn't know about it. Was it not marketed well? I didn't know about it, and then I was flipping channels on the Hulu and I caught the last 15 minutes of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sammy Sosa is also Caucasian now, so that's weird.
That is
yeah,
weird.
He looks like a vampire.
He does. He looks like a fucking vampire, dude. Oh my gosh.
Sammy, ESPN does not make bad 30 for 30s. Like they can make one on like tiddlywinks, and I would be captivated by it. They're all really good. I watched one on cycling, like Greg LeMond, and so and I was into it. Oh. Like it doesn't matter what it is. Like they can take the most obscure thing, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
I do want to say this though about it because kind of. During it and afterwards, everybody was tweeting and talking about it on Twitter. And then over the weekend, what's funny is I guess they were talking about that summer because of the documentary. I didn't realize it at the time because I was listening to sports radio all over the weekend in Atlanta. And I guess 680 The Fan or 92.9 The Game, mm-hmm. Carrie is a CBS sports affiliate. So whoever the CBS sports guy Saturday was just talking about that summer and him and like several others were just talking about how they were the ones who saved baseball from the strike. And I saw it all over Twitter and I'm like, what about Cal Ripken Jr. in 95?
That was a big moment. That was a big to do. Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember watching that. I remember driving home. Yeah. In time to see it. I can't remember where I was. I think it was at my grandma's. My mom picked me up and we got home in time so we could turn it on and watch it. But this lasted over the span of
it. It did. And I have like all the magazines and the sports clippings from that summer because I kept them. You're right. It helped more. It did more for the sport, I think, for sure than Ripken. But I think Ripken did a lot in 95 for baseball on the heels of, you know, that nasty strike and stuff. So
I always hated Sammy Sosa. I couldn't stand him.
Really?
I thought Mark McGwire deserved the MVP, hands down, and Sammy Sosa screwed the whole deal up.
Interesting.
I loved Mark McGwire. I thought Mark McGwire was amazing, but I couldn't stand Sammy Sosa. I thought it was questionable even then, which I didn't think I didn't think steroids or anything like that. I just didn't understand why he was good. Like, I couldn't. I watched him and I'm like, I don't know. This dude doesn't seem all that good, except he hits a lot of home runs. And he definitely hit a lot of home runs. There's no doubt. But because yeah. McGwire didn't win MVP, right? I'm not crazy. He did not win MVP that year. It was Sosa, right?
I don't remember.
I'd have to look that up.
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. And also, can we talk about the fact that probably the most overlooked player that year in the National League, Chipper Jones. 1998, Chipper Jones was incredible. Probably should have won MVP if Sosa and McGwire don't go insane.
Sosa, I mean, let's face it. Like, McGwire was a one-tool player. I mean, the dude hit dingers. That's all he did. He didn't play defense. He didn't run. Dude, he was a one-tool player, man. And I love McGwire. I freaking love McGwire.
Like, I just don't remember it that way. Maybe he was.
He probably hit some doubles, hit for power, so not just dingers, but like doubles, power, basically. But he was not. Sammy Sosa was a speed demon. Fast, could field.
In 1998, kind of had all of it, right? McGwire batted .299, Josh.
Okay.
He had an on-base percentage of .470.
Good God, OPS 470? That is insane. Yeah. That is insane.
His OPS was 1.22. His good OPS plus God. Was 216.
How many walks?
He had 162 walks.
Well, that's one a game.
One a game.
By my math.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That'll help that OBP a lot.
Yeah, for sure. He had
I still stand doubles. By my statement. He was basically a one tool player.
I mean, he was trying to hit home runs. 21
doubles.
Yeah, he was trying to hit home runs.
I mean, like,
that being said.
Yeah, he couldn't run. He couldn't throw. I mean, he wasn't a great fielder.
No, not at all.
I mean, I see what you're saying.
Sosa was like, he was a five-tool guy, man. I don't know if he had an arm. I can't remember if he had an arm.
Well, younger Sosa, when he came up, was lean and skinny and fast. And he had leadoff for the Cubs for a while. Because I remember going to a Braves Cub game when I was a kid. Sosa led off, and I think it might have even been the first pitch of the game. You'll never guess who was pitching. His name was Tom Glavine. He was giving up homers in the first. And the ball landed two rows right in front of me. Like, I thought I was going to catch a home run ball. and Sosa was not this, like, you know, slugger for his entire career.
No,
for
definitely
the longest
not.
Time,
right.
He was kind of a slappy speed hitter. And then, you know, he got into some stuff that may have helped his power numbers. Mm-hmm. And
do you want to hear a crazy stat?
Took on a
crazy stat about Mark McGwire. First of all, 70 home runs. He only struck out 155 times. And I know 155 is a lot, but, like, mm-hmm. Aaron Judge strikes out a lot more than that. You know what I'm saying? Like, 155, while a lot, especially at that time, is not a crazy insane number. Here's the more insane number, though. He had 155 strikeouts, right? 70 home runs, only 21 doubles. But he only grounded into a double play 8 times.
Wow.
And he was only hit by a pitch 6 times.
Wow.
Those are just crazy to me. Like, 8 times, here's a dude swinging away as hard as he can, and he only grounded into a double play 8 times. Like, that feels super low.
You know,
for a guy that's trying to crush.
Sammy Sosa has the ninth most home runs of all time.
That's wild.
That seems weird.
doesn't that seem weird? He's ninth, right ahead of Frank Robinson.
I know it's not true, because I think he ended up hitting more than 61. I think maybe 3 times. But it does seem like that Sosa was a home run hitter for like 2 years.
It seems that way.
And I know
it
that's
does.
Not true,
yeah.
But when you're thinking back on it, it feels like, oh, yeah, Sosa had like a 3-year window when he was a peak player.
He hit, in 96, he hits 40 bombs, 97, 36, 98, 66, 99, 63, 2050, 2001, 64, 2002, 49, 2003, 40, 2004, 35, and then he just basically just hits a plateau and hits 14 and then retires. He retires as
Can we do a
Hang on. He went to Baltimore for a year. In 2005 he played for Baltimore. And then
what?
And then
that's weird.
And then in 2007 2006, I guess he like didn't exist or something. 2007, Texas. He played for the Rangers.
I can't believe he played until 2007.
I can't either.
That's like Ron Gant with the Rockies. Like, that doesn't seem
Dude,
like it
Ron
happened.
Gant.
That's just
like
weird.
Ron Gant, Rockies.
Dale Murphy with the Rockies.
Yeah. Ron Gant, Rockies, Padres, Cardinals, Anaheim Angels with the striped unis. Ron Gant, his journey is so. Another weird one, Terry Pendleton with the Marlins. That's a weird look.
Marlins, 95. How about this? Terry Pendleton, no World Series with the Braves. Came back in 96, but 95 with the Marlins.
I never thought about that.
Of all the years of his life that he's given to the Atlanta Braves franchise, he does not have a World Series ring. That just seems unfair.
Here's another weird one.
Trivia question. Do you guys remember who gave up Mark McGwire's 62nd homer?
No.
They were playing the Cubs, if that gives any help. Wasn't Kerry Wood. It was another starter. Decent career. Decent guy. You know his name.
Mark Pryor.
Steve Traxel.
Oh, okay.
So those are your trivia questions. If you ever trivia night and someone says who gave up, and there you go.
Hey, another weird Brave in a – we should do a whole podcast about this, but another one is Deion Sanders – in a San Francisco Giants uni. That's a weird one.
I don't remember that at all.
He played for the Giants, dude.
Yep. Yep.
I don't recall that.
He was playing for the 49ers, right? Because he had to be at the same team,
right?
Because he was playing both, right?
Super weird.
He couldn't have played with them very – he couldn't have played with the Giants very long. That must have been like half a year or something. I don't remember that.
Dude, I'm looking it up real quick. Yeah.
That's super
weird. So, you know, we were freaking out about Mark McGwire's 470 OBP, right, Josh? Barry Bonds, 2001, you know what his OBP was?
Oh, it's like 600 or something.
515. 515. Oh! Yeah. He walked 177 times, and he only struck out 93 times. He batted 328.
Wow.
The next year, he hit 73 home runs that year. In 2002, he only hit 46 home runs, but he walked 198 times. His OBP was 582. This is his OBP from 2001 through 2004. 515, 582, 529, 609.
Good
he
God.
He slugged 863, 799, 749, 812. That is
my goodness gracious.
Insane. And look, I get that steroids are involved in that kind of thing, but there was a whole lot of guys took steroids in that time, and they ain't touched none of them numbers. Barry Bonds is the greatest player I've ever seen play. Now, you can say because of steroids, I'm fine with you putting that caveat on there. He's still the greatest baseball player I've ever seen play. I mean, not even close. It's like I've never seen anyone close to him in my lifetime.
Deion Sanders in 95 – he gets traded from Cincinnati to San Francisco, and I think that might be because of him playing for the 49ers, maybe. I can't remember. But he played 52 games with the Giants in 95 and hit 285 for him. And then in 96, he does NFL full-time. Then he comes back in 97 and is like, I'm bored. I'm going to play for the Reds again. And he hits 273.
Hmm.
Yeah. Not bad.
Weird. That's almost as weird as Deion Sanders retiring in football as a Baltimore Raven.
I didn't know that.
Seem like it should have ever happened.
I don't think I knew that. That's weird, man.
Do you remember Bonds getting Buck Showalter was the manager of the Rangers and walked him with the bases loaded to show you the kind of respect he had as a hitter?
Jeez.
Intentionally walked his with the bases loaded. That just tells you everything you need to know about how dominant he was then. I think that was maybe 03, but that's...
I just remember whatever the year was when he broke the single season record, when he broke McGwire and Sosa's record. What was that?
Mm-hmm. 2001.
2001, I think. Yeah.
Okay. What was the year that? Well, I'm thinking of the year when he broke the all time record. Then That would have been like 05, I guess. 06.
Right. Yeah.
3, 4, somewhere in there.
No, it was. I think it was 2004. Out of college.
Yeah.
No. Was it? Was it 06?
Yeah.
Are you thinking of A-Rod? You might be thinking of A-Rod.
I don't know.
He hit 45 home runs in 2004. After that, he hit 5, 26, and 28.
Okay. I guess I'm thinking of I just remember. Maybe it was the year when he broke the single.
What
season.
Number did he have to break? What was the number he had to break, Josh?
715. No, no.
755. Okay, yeah. So he didn't do that till 2007. It was his last year. He hit 28 home runs. He had a total of 762. So it would have been the last year, 2007.
2007. How many did he hit the year?
Total 28.
28. Okay. Which was a down year for him.
It's
crazy.
Yeah.
In 2001, you know, probably the greatest offensive year ever in baseball, whether or not you factor in steroids or not, how you feel about that. But when you think of the 2001 baseball season, you know, when I say 1998, the first thing you think of is Sosa McGuire.
Yeah.
Like, bar none, number one. Maybe you think of Kerry Wood, 20 strikeout game, or, you know, the Yankees starting their dynasty. When you say 2001, even though Bonds hit 70 home runs or 73 home runs, you don't even think about that being like, I think of Luis Gonzalez. I think of George Bush throwing out the first pitch. And I think of the Mike Piazza homer, the first game after 9/11.
Yeah.
Like, those are the things I think of when I think of the 2001 season. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that was the year Bonds was, like, the best player of all time.
Yeah.
It's like the fourth. Because I think we, like, just saw it happen 3 years prior. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed kind of like, it seemed kind of anticlimactic.
Dude had a,
you know?
162.8 career war.
Yeah,
stupid.
It's insane.
That doesn't even make sense.
And this is the thing. To be honest with you, I think even if he doesn't take steroids, I think it's well over 100. I mean, that's how good Barry Bonds was. Like,
yeah.
This is the thing. Steroids. You cannot say the steroids got him the eye to be able to walk that many times. Now, I know when he
was
insanely good, the year that he hit 73 home runs, people walked him like crazy. I get that, okay? But, I mean, in 2004, he walked 232 times. And he only hit 45 home runs. Like, 45 is kind of a normal number. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, that's just a good power hitter number. That's not insane by today's standards.
Mm-hmm.
But they still walked him 232 times because not only did he hit 45 home runs, he hit 27 doubles, 3 triples, and he had 135 hits, period. You know, that's insanely good. He batted 362. You know,
amazing, too, like, his attitude. Like, I don't know if it was the steroids or just his general way he carried himself, but why don't we ever think of Barry Bonds as one of the coolest athletes of all time?
Oh, he was so cool.
The guy's name is Barry Bonds. I mean, that's a cool-sounding name.
Yeah.
He's got the earring. He's got the sweet swing.
He was basically,
you know,
Willie Mays' predecessor.
Yeah,
I mean,
but his
not
predecessor.
He
wasn't
awesome.
Cool, though. He wasn't cool.
Oh, he
I don't
was.
Think he was
right.
Cool.
You were an Atlanta fan. You were an Atlanta fan. That's why he wasn't cool.
Dude.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I get what you're saying, Josh, because he didn't. He carried himself like such a dick.
He was. Yeah, honest. He did. He did.
He wasn't cool in the way Griffey was cool.
Right.
No, like, Griffey was the sweet kid, though. Like, Griffey was not only, like, Griffey was a good boy, though. And Barry never played up the good boy role, I think. I also wonder how much our vision of Barry is, one, slanted by his time with the Pirates, where we all hated him because he was a Pirate. And two, him being a Giant, so we didn't get to see a lot of his games. Like, when they were West Coast team, after, because by that time the Braves weren't in there.
Right.
Yeah, and there was no MLB Network. Or Twitter,
right.
So we, yeah.
So Barry Bonds wasn't the biggest thing in the world to us East Coasters because we didn't get to see him play very much, like, in comparison.
But it wasn't like we got to see a lot of Ken Griffey Jr.
No.
I mean, we didn't get to watch him play very much either, but I remember every kid in, like, 1995, man, wear their hat backwards. Like, I went and bought the Mariners fitted cap because I wanted to look like Ken Griffey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I never once was like, man, I want to be like Barry Bonds.
I had a buddy that, like, that got the single earring with the cross in it, like Barry.
Oh, no.
Oh yeah.
Oh, no.
He was 100% into it. Yeah. Yeah.
He's a big George Michael fan.
No, he loved Barry. He loved Barry. Oh. He was always, this kid, he was one of my best friends. He was always the anti-establishment kid. So he liked Barry Bonds. He loved Colorado football for God knows why.
Cordell Stewart?
He was a Bills fan. Maybe he had a Buffalo thing. I don't know. But, like, maybe he just liked Buffaloes. But he was a big Bills fan. Like, he would travel and go see. But he always hated local teams. Like, he didn't like the Falcons. He didn't like Georgia. You know, he was always that. And his dad's, like, a huge Georgia fan. He was a middle kid. So, he's, like, your typical middle kid. Yeah. This guy, he's now like a coach at our local high school and everything. He's had dreadlocks ever since high school. White as me. And he's got like Rastafarian style dreadlocks. I'm talking like all the way down to his butt just about. And I mean, it's just who he is, and he lives it, and it's cool. But like, he was always that guy. But Barry Bonds was like, he loved Barry Bonds. He was like one of his favorite players. So, Yeah. I think Barry, if you are from Atlanta, you just hated Barry. He ruined so many good things
for
Atlanta.
I think a lot of people didn't like him, though. I don't think it was just Atlanta, but yeah.
Maybe.
He wasn't a likable guy.
He wasn't.
I think he'll even admit to that. He wasn't there to make friends. He was very abrasive and was not the best teammate ever, you know.
Would you say he's a lot like Michael Jordan?
No.
Yeah, we're the worst publicist, though. Michael had the best publicist in the world, you know? That's just...
Yep.
Because we heard the stories about Barry being a bad teammate and being a jerk. Mm-hmm. I don't remember hearing that until Michael Jordan retired. You know, like...
Mm-hmm. That's because people were afraid
to say it. Maybe I just wasn't listening.
Yeah. If Barry is wearing 5 rings, is Barry a good teammate then?
I don't think it matters
because he's got
no one's complaining
because he's got you know? It, right. And I think that's Michael, you know,
also,
I mean, he's got
it's also
six
the way
rings.
He talks. He talks like a little bitch, you know,
I don't think voice. That. I think that's the way you would say that about Mike Tyson and Mike Tyson then bite your ear off. I'm just
yeah,
saying.
Probably.
Well, that's going to do it for today's Not Combination. Fellas, thanks for hanging out. This has been a fun one. We talked about a lot of cool stuff. I enjoyed it. Can't wait to hang out with you tomorrow.
God bless.
If you guys would like to support the nation, you can do so by visit patreon.com/Not Combination, where you can join. You can get t-shirt swag at one level of support. You can get you a sticker for the back of your car or for your book bag, whatever you like, at another level of support. And, hey, get you a shout-out on the show. Give us a... We make this show happen by your support. We know things can be a little tight for people, but we appreciate it. It helps all you patrons out there that do support the show. Thank you so much for being a part of the nation. It means the world to us that you give to us on a monthly basis to help the show make it happen. We sure do appreciate it. It means a lot to us. And shout out to all you guys. Thank you. Thank you. We'll catch you tomorrow, Not Combination. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit nakahomanation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Options Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.